our reading today is going to be given to us by Jack Smith. Jack?
So the reading today is an excerpt from a speech by Robert F. Kennedy, and this was given to the National Union of South African Students in Cape Town, South Africa, on June 6th, 1966. And this was, of course, in the middle of apartheid in South Africa. So this is an excerpt from, and Robert Kennedy is speaking here. "There is," said an Italian philosopher, "nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things. Yet, this measure of the task of your generation," he's speaking to the young people now, "and the road is strewn with many dangers. First is the danger of futility, the belief that there is nothing one man or one woman can do against the enormous array of the world's ills, against misery, ignorance, injustice, and violence. Yet, many of the world's greatest movements of thought and action have flowed from the work of a single person. A young monk began the Protestant Reformation. A young general extended an empire from the Macedonia to its borders, to the borders of the earth. And a young woman reclaimed the territory of France. It was a young Italian explorer who discovered the New World, and a 32-year-old Thomas Jefferson proclaimed that all men are created equal. Give me a place to stand, said Archimedes, and I will move the world. These people move the world, and so can we all. Few have, though, the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events. And the total of all these acts will be written in history of this generation. Thousands of Peace Corps volunteers are making a difference in isolated villages and city slums in dozens of countries. Thousands of unknown men and women in Europe resisted the occupation of the Nazis, and many died, but all added to the ultimate strength and freedom of their countries. It is from this numberless, diverse acts of courage and belief that human history is shaped. Each time a person stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, these ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." So I think this morning we have a chance at Wolf to add our little ripple to the ripples that Wolf is creating with the farm workers.
Thank you, Jack. And now Pat Benjamin is going to introduce our speaker.
As you know, the Wolf community has been supporting the Farm Workers Association for the last year. And so we've been very happy to accept the donations from our congregation towards this work to support the farm workers of Washington County. And I'm very honored to be able to introduce Lisa Anderson of the Western Farm Workers Organization. She is the operations manager and a full-time volunteer coordinator. Lisa coordinates the day-to-day work of the organization, and she trains volunteers. Also, besides hearing from Lisa, this is a kickoff for a back-to-school campaign to support the children of the farm workers. And downstairs, there is a large box that Mary Cost has created, and a list of what kinds of things are needed for the children to go back to school. So, welcome, Lisa.
Great. Thank you very much. I thought I'd begin by speaking, and then in a few minutes, I also have some slides to share, and I can explain more about the work that we do also through the slideshow. My name is Lisa Anderson, and I'm the Operations Manager of Western Farm Workers Association, and I'm very, very glad to be here with all of you today. I want to thank the Social Justice Committee and everybody who's both been part of organizing the opportunity for us to be here and speak to you today, but also I'm very happy to say that many of the faces I'm looking out to are familiar, because even though our relationship with West Hills has been maybe a year or so, so many of you have become come in and participated and been part of many of our different events, and even those of you who haven't come in have helped by contributing clothing or contributing holiday gifts at the holidays, and we truly appreciate that. And myself and Shirley, who's one of our volunteers who is here today, are also going to be, we'll be down at the coffee hour, so we'd love the opportunity to have a chance to speak further to any of you during the coffee hour. Thank you, Pat, for the introduction. I'm the current operations manager of Western Farm Workers Association, and I'm a full-time volunteer organizer, and I've been a full-time volunteer organizer for the last 16 years. And I am originally from the state of Michigan and came from a state that had a long tradition of working people coming together, building organizations to address common living conditions and working conditions, and came out here originally to Oregon to go to law school and left after a year to become an organizer, and I've been doing this ever since. But Western Farm Workers Association, we're a membership association of 13,000 low-income working people, many who do farm work, have done farm work, may have to do farm work sometime in the future, or have a family member whose income is somehow dependent on agricultural work. And this is a state, the state of Oregon, where agriculture is a very critical part of our economy. Agriculture is the number two sector of the Oregon economy, right behind high tech. So it's not surprising that there are so many people whose jobs in some way are connected to the agricultural sector. However, our membership is not exclusively farm workers. We also have a membership of families who do landscaping work, who do construction work, who clean houses or clean offices or clean homes. But what all of our membership has in common is that the work that they do, they're not earning enough through the work that they do to afford basic necessities. And in that sense, the number of people who our membership and our work extends to, unfortunately, is growing, because we're finding an increasing number of families in similar situations. You know, maybe they're not, you know, maybe they're able to put food on the table, but increasingly it's harder to afford housing. And probably most people in this room are aware of, if they've not been affected personally, maybe have friends or family members that have been impacted by the fact that rents are going up significantly, not just in Multnomah County, but also in Washington County, or families that are being impacted by a growing inability to afford basic medical care. And we find that as an organization, many of the families that are part of our organization, even if they maybe have medical insurance through the work that they do, it's harder to afford it or access it. You know, for example, one of our members who works at an assisted care facility in Forest Grove, and she's been there 20 years, she has medical insurance, but her deductible is $5,000. So it doesn't really cover much. And I was telling one of our supporters from another church that's had a long relationship with us, a church called Rebo Presbyterian Church, which is in Aloha, and we were talking about this, and she said, well, my deductible is $7,000. So this is the access to an ability to afford basic necessities is something that certainly our membership, who are farm workers or low-paid workers, are struggling with, but we all also recognize that this is a problem that's affecting a growing number of people in the community. So as an organization, our basic principle is to start with the lowest paid workers in the community and join those workers together in a way that they can first and foremost survive. So part of how we do that is that we organize a self-help benefit program. And it's self-help because many of the families who need the resources have an important role in helping to organize and build the benefit program and the organization in general. And one of the families was supposed to be here with me today but had a medical emergency. But many of the low-paid workers who are part of our organization not only need and can receive the benefits that we organize through the support of the community, but also are part of organizing them, whether it's part of a speaker's drill when we go to different places in the community, like we're here today, or, for example, Portland State University, or many different places we speak in the community, or when we do outreach. Since we're a 100% volunteer organization, we have no paid staff, we do a lot of outreach into the community on a daily basis, whether it's setting up a table at Lamb's Thriftway. In fact, we're so close. Maybe some of you have come across us there, or at farmers markets or street festivals or at the university. But, you know, part of our work is constantly reaching out and involving more people in the community around how can we address the most fundamental problem of poverty and what's it going to take joining people together to do something about that. And that's how we build our organization, and we call it arm's length organizing, you know, person to person, and we build our benefit program that way as well. We don't take any government funding, so all the resources that we organize are organized through individuals, members of the community. And one example that I'd like to give, because I think it's a very good example, and it speaks to also the reading that Jack gave about, you know, the ripple, is about 10 years ago, I guess it, maybe 12 years ago, we had a table set up talking to people outside of one of the Albertsons in Hillsborough. And we met a woman who said, yeah, I want to come in and I want to help with your Christmas food distribution. And she came in and she volunteered on our Christmas food distribution. And I know at least some of you from here were part of that this year. And after the Christmas food distribution, she said, okay, what's next? What can we do? And we said, well, one of the ways that we organize support to keep our office open 7 days a week and to support our winter survival campaign is we make tamales. And we do it as a fundraiser, and it's a Super Bowl, and we take orders, and we get orders in advance, and it helps us raise funds that we need to make it through the winter months. She said, great, I'm going to talk to people at Kaiser Permanente where I work and see if they'll be interested in ordering tamales. And they were. And out of that, the next, you know, next time it was got to be summer, and she said, okay, what's next? And we said, well, this is the time of year, and this, I'm going to be showing some slides in a minute where there's a lot of farm workers, not only the families that live in the area year-round that do agricultural work, but also a lot of migrant farm workers who come for the berry harvest. And when families come, many of them are coming from California. They're spending a lot of money in gas just to get to the area. They're not getting paid for the first couple weeks that they're here. So we organize a lot of staple items like beans and rice and cooking oil. And she said, okay, I'm going to put up some signs at Kaiser and see what we can do. So she put up some signs, and they collected 1,000 pounds of pinto beans, rice, cooking oil. And one of the people who came out, we said, okay, you not only need to help collect this, but you need to get people to come out and help us deliver it. And one of the people who came out to help deliver it, he was a bioethicist with Kaiser, and he came out to the farm labor camps with us, as I know some of you have done both recently and last year, and helped us deliver the food that the farm workers needed. And he was very, you know, moved by the conditions and meeting the farm workers and seeing the situation and wanted to do more. So he invited us to an event. It was a committee meeting to organize the Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service for Kaiser, and we went there and we briefly stood up and spoke a couple sentences about our work, and one of the people there said, well, we have these optometrists, and, you know, yes, they could bag food or they could sort clothing as part of the Day of Service, but they're optometrists, and they would really like to provide their skills as optometrists. You know, they could see 80 people. Do you know 80 people who need eye exams? I said, well, I'm sure we do. There was no doubt in my mind that there were 80 people who needed eye exams. So we organized this, and we had probably 40 or 50 volunteers on our end because we had volunteers to be advocates, to go through the process with each patient that was being seen, to take their health history ahead of time. Also, we had interpreters for people who were Spanish-speaking, and it went really well, and they were really impressed. There were two things that made an impression on them. One was how well it was organized, and we said, well, we're organizers, you know, this is what we do. But also, it made a big impression on them, the number of people who needed glasses out of the people that were seen. It was probably 90%. So they could see that there was really a huge need in the community for their services. And they not only organized the and donated the exams, but they also donated the glasses for anyone who needed them, which was huge because it's one thing to be told, yes, you've got poor vision. Most people have some sense that might be the case, but to have a way to get what you need to correct the problem was really important. And in January of this year was the 11th year that the doctors from Kaiser Permanente have come out, and they've seen well over 1,000 people in eye exams and glasses. So it's really made a huge difference, but it literally started with one person, one two-minute conversation outside of grocery store about the fact that there's low-paid workers, we're bringing the community together to address these problems. These are ways that you can get involved, and it really grew from there. And that's a small example of some of the work that we do. And I did bring some slides. I'm trying to watch my time, so I do want to show a little bit more, and I know that I have Lisa's going to be assisting me. Okay, so this is a picture of some berries, and probably many of you are familiar with the fact that one of the major agricultural products in Washington County are berries. And at one point it was strawberries. We are now, as I'm told by the blueberry farmers, the blueberry basket of the nation. Because even though the state of Michigan, where I'm from, there's more plants, the yield here is much greater, and that's been a collaboration between the scientists at OSU and the berry farmers, and we have ideal weather conditions for growing blueberries. So we can move to the next slide. So this is actually a photo taken out at one of the farm labor camps, and one of the farm labor camps where we were with some of you here just a few weeks ago. This is a camp out in Cornelius where the workers here work for Oregon Berry Harvesting, and typically this is how the farm workers get to the field, is in buses. And when we were out a couple weeks ago, they were picking strawberries, and where they were picking was in St. Paul. So it was about an hour ride each way to and from the fields. But Oregon, we used to grow a lot of strawberries, and even though our strawberries are amazing, they have a high sugar content and they don't travel well. So many of them go into processing, and as such, with the exception of those you can still get fresh market, it's become really a specialty crop. The farm workers that were picking the strawberries from Oregon Berry Harvesting, those strawberries are going to Haagen-Dazs, Japan. So to give you an idea. Can we change the slide? So this is a, it gives you a little bit of idea of some of the housing. You know, the migrant families that come are living in temporary housing that here in Oregon is provided by the farmers who need the workers for the migrant workers. At this particular employer, at least half of the workers who work for him live in the area year-round in apartments and duplexes, and then we'll work picking berries in the summertime. But the families who are migrant workers come and live on what are known as farm labor camps that in Oregon are all privately owned and run by the farmers who need the workers. So this is a photo of a clothing distribution. A lot of times when the farm workers come, they'll drive up from California and maybe in a van or some kind of vehicle, and families don't come with a lot of resources. They come pretty much with the clothes on their back, maybe a few changes of clothing, but it's not like there's a U-Haul trailer or they can, you know, bring a lot of items. So, and if you've seen people coming out of the fields from picking blueberries or picking any kind of berry, it pretty much destroys your clothing. So that's one of the things that we'll do, either take the clothing directly to the camps, or in the case today, we're going out later this afternoon. We took requests last time we were out there, and then we have volunteers working to fill the requests. And I know Mary has helped us with this portion of it. This is just another picture of the clothing distribution set up at the camp. Another picture. So this is a picture of, in the course of being out there, we're also talking to the farm workers, finding out about what the living conditions, working conditions, what are some of the situations that they're facing. People are signing up as members of the association, and that means that they can receive the benefits, but also participate in the organization in any way they can. And just this last week on Wednesday, we had about three families from the camps that came into our office. And one of them, she's 19, and she's almost trilingual, because many of the families that are here right now as migrant workers are from Oaxaca, and there's many different indigenous languages spoken, but she said, I want to be a volunteer. Sign me up as a volunteer. So many of the families also get involved and participate. This is, again, gives you an idea of, you know, some of the housing, and also these are the workers shortly after some of them have come back from the fields. There's many of them have children, so often when we're out at the camp, there's lots of kids. And this is a photo, the man in the yellow T-shirt. His name is Julian, and he and his wife, Victoria, for any of you that came out with us, not this year, but the previous year, Victoria, his wife, was the one that when we got out to the camp, I had her, you know, talk to all of us and explain some about her history. They're both from Oaxaca, and they've been doing farm work since they were 13 years old. And Julian is really part of the leadership, and his family is similar to many of the families. He lives in Merced, California most of the year. Many of the families come either from Merced, California or Madera, California, working grapes and other products and then come here. Okay, and finally, a thank you to all of you. So I think I'm pretty much at my time. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. And myself and Shirley will be downstairs after the service. So we'd love to talk to any of you, talk more about our need for volunteers, how people can participate, or any questions that you might have. So thank you so much for having us today.